The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Members, please turn on your microphones when responding to the roll call. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Avila.
Here.
Vice Chair Chibuzi.
Here.
Representatives Altman.
Here.
Ranking Member Brown.
Here.
Representatives Duran.
Here.
Garrison.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Smith. Excuse. Snyder.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
Yarbrough.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. Members, as well as those in the audience, please make sure to put on silent mode or turn off your cell phones and other communication devices. Members, today we have two items on our agenda. We will begin by taking up our consent agenda for the appropriation project bills, and will then hear a presentation from the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs related to the veteran nursing home's financial status. Members, we will take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. Members, we will not take up question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in questions and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. Please keep in mind that passing these bills makes these bills eligible for funding, but does not guarantee that these projects will be funded or funded at the requested level. With that being said, members, are there questions? Are there questions? Seeing no questions, is there public testimony? We have Ken Cutter with the City of Parkland waving in support. We have Brandy McCabe with the Selfless Love Foundation, a proponent of the consent agenda. Wave in support, thank you. And that does it for public testimony. Members, we're now in debate on the consent agenda. Seeing no debate on the consent agenda, before I call the vote on the consent agenda, are there any nay vote forms? No? Sabrina, please call the roll on the consent agenda. Members, remember, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for every bill on the consent agenda.
Chair Avila?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tribuzzi?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Ranking Member Brown?
Yes.
Representatives Duran?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Smith? Snyder?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina and members. Sabrina, please show the consent agenda passes. All of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. Members, for the presentation today from the Department of Veterans Affairs, I would like to recognize Major General James Hartzell, the Executive Director of the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs. Sir, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very special committee. For our veterans in our homes, thank you for inviting me to come and talk about where we are currently with our six existing skilled nursing facility, nursing homes. And I have about seven or eight slides to talk about that and our solvency for our trust fund and our plan and what we're going to do and how we're going to get there and how I need your help to help us get there. And then I'm going to, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I would like to call up my Deputy Executive Director, Bob Estalos, toward the end to talk about our two new homes and the status of our new homes and where we're at. So your permission, sir, I'll start. Thank you. Thank you. Now, they've given me a tool to use here, so we'll see what the Marine General can do. So, I want to start with our mission. And it's not on this slide, but everything for a military person like myself has to do with what are we trying to accomplish? What's the end state? Why am I here? Why are we here in support of our veterans today at this briefing? And it's our mission, which is to provide safe, compassionate, quality care for our state veterans who need to be in a skilled nursing facility. Safe, compassionate, quality care. One of those three-legged stools can't fail in our nursing homes. It can be very great quality, it can have great safety, but if it's done without any compassion, that's my failure, our failure. We need to take care of our veterans who are in our nursing homes. The goals that we have to accomplish that mission are on the slide. To restore our state veterans nursing homes to what I would like to call, for those of us who are military and have military affiliation, our SOP, our standard operating procedures, which were pre-COVID, pre-opening two new nursing homes in the middle of COVID, that was our standard operating procedure. Our daily routine was working wonderfully. And then the pandemic affected us, like it has everybody else in the state at all levels. And I'm going to talk about how it affected us briefly, but also what we're doing to address those effects and move past the pandemic to get to back to SOP, standard operating procedures. And that's where I'll need your help. First and foremost, our four goals in order to support the mission is to have a high-quality, five-star rated homes. Once again, when your census drops below a certain number, you lose that five-star rating. And we're always, all of our homes are down to about 65% occupancy across the board, as I've briefed to this committee before. So one of our goals is to get us back to our five-star rating, which is quality. Next is get us to a 95% occupancy serving our eligible Florida veterans. That's where we were pre-COVID, February of 2020. We were at 98% occupancy. We also need to get a positive cash flow once again to restore our financially strong trust funds. I think as I've explained this committee before, we operate in a trust fund status as our veterans have income from the federal government come in and they pay to live in our homes that we provide for them. That money goes into trust fund. We are fiscally self-sustaining in standard operating procedure environment. We are not today, but when we get back to where we were, and I have a plan to get there that I'll be briefing briefly, we will get back to physical self-sustainment as we were. And then also to improve the working environment that recognizes our frontline caregivers' efforts, the battle that I've talked about they've been in the trenches, in the foxholes for the last 2 years, because I owe them a balanced work environment, but also a balanced home life. They need to be safe. They need to know that we have compassion for them, that I have compassion for them as a leader. And so that's going to be the goals that we have. The way we get there, part of that has to do with the current status of where we are in our homes. Currently in our six skilled veteran nursing facilities that we have, and we'll talk about the two that we're opening later, but in the current six that we have that are open right now, we have 720 beds available, of which we have 65% occupancy. As I said, we were at 98% occupancy before COVID. Every fourth, I call it direct care staff position, direct clinical care staff position in those six currently open nursing homes is vacant. I'm short staff. I'm going to fight. I'm going to war with a three-person fire team that's supposed to have four. I'm going to war with a battalion that's supposed to have four companies and it has three. That means everybody else is picking up the slack and having to work extra hard in the middle of the COVID war and the COVID fight, and I have to take care of them. It's my responsibility. We currently have, and I'm going to show the actual numbers here of where my shortages exist. In our registered nurses, RNs, that number equates to 32% short. I'm currently 32% short in my RNs in our six open nursing homes. I'm 19% short in my LPNs, direct care clinical staff. And in my CNAs, I'm about 31% short staffed, which means 69% of the people who are working are the ones picking up the 100% effort and slack. These direct care staffing shortages are preventing us from admitting residents. I can get us back to 90-plus percent occupancy. I have a current wait list right now today. I checked before I walked in here, and our six open nursing homes of almost 90 veterans and their families who need to move into our nursing homes because they know we provide better care. They know we take better care of them than the private sector because that's our mission. And that's what we're good at. I need to get those 90 veterans and help their families get those veterans into our empty beds. I cannot do it without warriors, fighters, staffing. And that's where I'm going to ask for your help. Our plan to fill these staffing vacancies will give our waiting veterans what they earned, what they deserve, which is safe, compassionate, quality health care. The plan to get to, one, both the nursing home back to SOP, but also to get back to trust fund solvency, because again, when our trust fund, it has the income coming in from beds being filled, we pay for ourselves. And you'll see the ask that I have this year in a COVID pandemic fight that we're in, we have to ask for money, and the governor's supporting that, and I have a slide on that. But I'll talk about, in addition at the plan, I need to address our staffing, because if I address the staffing need that I have, and if I can fill those staffing positions, then I can fill the beds, which is good for our volume, which is good for our solvency, our trust fund solvency, and it's good for, most importantly, our veterans across the state. So the overall plan is to continue our efforts to reduce costs and utilize direct care staff efficiency in our state veteran homes by, one, moving department-wide staffing agency contracts to maximize buying power and get to competitive pricing. We have an ITB that's been completed, and we had a number of people very interested in supporting our nursing homes because they know about the quality and who we are and what we are. And we're going to select three of those top three to provide direct care needs to our state veteran homes. That'll help reduce cost. It'll improve our efficiencies and our effectiveness of who we're working with when we do have to have staffing agencies, which, again, I want to eliminate and get away from eventually. But until I get to that point, I do have to use staffing agencies. The goal also is with affordable agency staffing rates from a bid process and our recruitment efforts to hire new staff, we will be able to increase occupancy rates from the current 65% to 80% over the next 6 months. That's what the plan will accomplish. Of course, Omicron has affected us. When we submitted our budget in August of last year, I had a plan. I had a budget. And we did not anticipate Omicron coming to continue to affect staffing, which kept us at 65%, and not able to admit people, which, again, kept my trust fund solvency having an issue. Right? So that wasn't anticipated last August. I'll just be honest about that. But it's real, and we're fighting this fight now. And that's why I'm going to need your help. So specifically to address the staffing issue and return to our trust fund solvency, and in order to move from a 65% bed occupancy rate to a 90-plus bed occupancy rate to provide those veterans who are waiting to move into our homes with safe, compassionate, quality care and give them a home, I need your help. It's a staff incentive plan is what I'm asking for your help with. And here's what I need to accomplish in this plan. One, recruit new staff. Fill vacant positions, address the anticipated losses from COVID and workforce pressures where people are hiring other people and paying them more out of our homes, provide relief to our current staff who are working those extra shifts, not able to take their vacation, not able to be with their families, quality of life issues. Second, retain my current staff. So I need to recruit new staff, but I must retain the great people that have been in the fight with me for these past 2 years. And I can do that with financial incentives to keep up their cost of livings and allow for a healthier home life for them, happier, healthier home life. And also to provide up-to-date technology and equipment to better serve the residents' needs. And that's part of the budget that we have, and I can address that. And then improve the morale of the staff. Again, I can provide safe care and quality care. I want it to be compassionate care. And that's morale. And with those of us who are leaders understand that we have that responsibility as leaders to affect morale within our ranks. And then I need to, third, eliminate the need for costly and the less desirable staffing by agencies. And we have a great plan we have in place in doing that. We're already saving and making better money for our state by doing that now, but we have a much better plan to move forward with. And the above, these three points, recruiting, retention, and eliminating staffing, will help us provide quality care to our veteran residents. That's the end state. I want to accomplish this with the governor has recommended in his Florida First budget, his Freedom First budget, addresses where we needed to be and where we were when we submitted the budget in August. Again, what I'm asking for now is an $8.5 million plus up to that budget, and I have the specifics here of what that is. And I'll just have to read these for you. So in order to retain and recruit, hit those three goals, for having quality direct care clinical staff, I have to lessen the inequality between my current salaries and the similar private sector salaries that a CNA, an RN, or an LPN can be paid working in a nursing home across the street from where they're currently working now. We currently are 30% below the average salaries of other Florida private skilled nursing facilities. I currently pay an average of a 30% lower wage for that same RN, LPN, CNN. For some of those positions, it's up to almost 50% for the very technical, very skilled people that we have to have in our homes, because those people are highly sought after. Staffing agency costs is between 2 and 3 times what it costs for my, but the average person to work as a state employee in a home. I have to pay 2 to 3 times more cost for that person to fill the gap. For that 25% hole that I have of state people working for us, I have to fill those holes with agencies. I need to create an environment that supports long-term retention. I really have to be able to retain the great people that have hung with us for these past 2 years. And it's a comprehensive, multidiscipline incentive plan. You can call it pay, but this is an incentive for our current staff members, my current fighters, but also to recruit people to come on board, to be on our team. I have to align my salaries with prevailing Florida long-term care rates. I need to have a shift differential for those hard-to-fill evening, night, weekend, holiday shifts. I need to have a sign-on bonus plan for competitive pay inducement to bring people on, those hand-picked quality people to bring them on. And I'll hire them from the nursing agencies because a lot of them want to work with us, with our veterans. If I could pay them and incentivize them with this incentive plan, I know I can hire some of them. And then I want to be able to have a performance-based rewards program that it rewards those who are working the hardest. Those who are doing the very best as far as RNs, LPNs, CNAs, over the year, I want to be able, for those top 5% performers, I want to be able to give them more, to reward them. That creates good morale and incentivizes people to work harder. So improving morale and improving the quality of safe, compassionate care that we provide will address the needs that I have. That's $8.577 million, and I have the specific breakdown for that that I can answer in questions as needed. As I said, the governor is greatly supporting what we're doing, and back when he put in his recommendations last fall, he has asked for a trust fund solvency to get us $44 million to back into general revenue, because I think, as I've briefed here before, we lost millions of dollars going from 98% occupancy to 65% occupancy. We didn't have the income coming into the bank account. And this is what I need to do to have a solvent bank account for operations and maintenance and moving forward. The good news is, in a normal SOP year, and I just pulled these numbers before I came down as well, in FY19-20, we asked for about $4 million. The year before that, we asked for about $2 million. The year before that, we asked for about $5 million in GR. That's what I normally would be standing here asking for your help in. But COVID's not normal. We're all aware of that. But I can get back to normal. Post-COVID, with hiring, with this incentive plan support, I can get back to where I can fill my beds, give a great, compassionate, safe place for veterans to live because they earned it, and I want to take care of them. I also want to improve the lives of our residents and our employees. It's a combined effort. That's why I'm wearing purple today. This means joint. Thank you for your joint. This is our joint look color in the military, all right? So I'm wearing purple because I need your help to be joint, to help me in this. So $2 million it will for maintenance and repair in our homes, and these are the standard procedures, about $487,000 for electronic time system, which again saves us time, believe it or not, and we get away from the paper accounting of our times and hours. $1.1 million for additional resources. That was the additional RNs and FTEs that we had for the build-out of our new homes, two new homes, and then $13.8 million in contracted services. The cost of contracted services went up last year, so that's why we asked for it in our budget, but this is also because we're opening two new homes. And Mr. Chair, I think you asked me last time I was here about what is that. This is because we have two new homes, so there's an additive cost for the contracted services for two new homes, as well as the increased costs for those same services that we had pre-pandemic. So, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to call up Bob Asalos, my Deputy Executive Director, and just briefly go over the status of our two new nursing homes and where we're at, and then I'll come back up, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Asalos, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I'm wearing green for Army.
Cool.
Before I talk about the physical plan, I just want to share something with you. I went out and I visited all our homes the other day. And in one home, I was sitting in a room with a Medal of Honor winner who threw himself on a grenade and saved a bunch of corpsmen and wounded soldiers. And I walked in the next room, and there was a Marine Corps general who fought in three wars. And then I stepped out in the courtyard, and I sat down, and I listened to one of our veterans who was a cliff climber during the Normandy invasion. And he fought in Normandy, northern France, the Battle of the Bulge, and he lost his ankle in the Battle of the Hurgon Forest. These are the people who we take care of. And these are the people why these new nursing homes have to be worthy to be their last homes. And I'll tell you, they are. They are beautiful buildings. I mean, I've seen lots of nursing homes in my time. These truly are some of the nicest nursing homes in the state of Florida. So let me give you an update on both of them. First is the Artie Kopis Nursing Home. That's a $62 million, 121,000 square foot nursing home that's going to open up in the community of tradition right by Port St. Lucie. It's 120 beds, but it's divided into six neighborhoods of 20 beds each. And we did that so that they have a small community feel and it's very deinstitutionalized feeling. 60 of the beds will be devoted to Alzheimer's and dementia, which we continue to see more of rising in our veterans population. And then we will also have six bariatric units for our residents who are of the higher weight. These neighborhoods flank the main building, which has our reception, our offices, and our dining, and our services. And again, what that does is that allows us to have that community feel so that it's not such an institutional feeling. Now, what's the status on these buildings? General Hartzell delegated us to do an oversight group to get these buildings open as soon as we can. And we just did a major meeting on it on Friday. And our schedule is that for Artie Kopis, we have one more item that we need to do really for licensure. We have to put a fence around the pond. We anticipate that and punch out items to be done in the next month and a half. On March 1st, we are applying for our license. We hope to have that license completed within 30 days, April 1st. Start admitting residents in May so that by the end of May, we will have eight residents admitted and that building will be on its way. And we are committed to this timeline. This is a realistic timeline. We're committed to it. We have 94 veterans who are already on our wait list for that building. They need care, and we need to provide them that care. Second is Lake Baldwin. Lake Baldwin is our former... There we go. Lake Baldwin, that is a former VA community living center that the federal VA donated to us in Lake Baldwin in Orange County. And we accepted title to that in August of 2018. And we're renovating that to be our eighth state veteran nursing home with 114 beds. Currently, we have 80 veterans on that wait list. Here we are at the back end of getting this building open. We have completed all major renovations. We are on punch list renovations right now. We should have our punch list items done within a month. There, too, March 1st is our licensure application. April 1st, we anticipate having our license. And May, we intend to open up admissions. And for there, we would have eight patients by the end of the month in May. So that's our timeline. We are looking at Saturday, May 21st, which is Armed Forces Day, to do our dedication and opening and naming of that. And also, we are soliciting names from the public and veterans groups because, again, we name all our veterans' homes after Medal of Honor winners, and we are in that process now. The reason why we've had to extend these periods, really, as the general said, is staffing. The construction, we had the supply issues like everyone else, but we're on the back end of that. So supply chain issues are in our rearview mirror. But again, it's the staffing. It's finding the CNAs, the activities people, the social workers for our buildings. And once we're able to overcome that, we'll get them open. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Astalos. Members? I don't know if to, General?
I have one more slide, Mr. Chairman.
Back to you.
Okay, sorry, thank you.
Back to you, Mr.
And then we'll both be available for questions, because we definitely, we want you to understand, we need to help, all of us help, Purple, what we're trying to do. I've used this slide before. It is our honor mission, because at some point in their life, a veteran stood up and volunteered to support you and I and our families and defend us and our nation. And those are the people we take care of. And we're very humble. I'm very passionate, and I have a lot of purpose, but I'm very humble when it comes to taking care of these people. Bob mentioned two veterans, two of my home residents. They both passed away in the last month and a half. One of them was a Medal of Honor recipient from the Korean War. And when an enemy grenade landed close to his position, where he was helping his assistant gunner, machine gunner, receive medical attention, he has severe wounds, and he was being overrun by Chinese forces. He was in intense pain. But when another grenade fell into the foxhole where the corpsman was sitting on top of him taking care of him, he grabbed the corpsman, he put the corpsman underneath him, and he threw his body on top of the second grenade. And he lived. That veteran lived to be almost 90 years old in my home. That's the people that we are honored to take care of. The other veteran he talked about, retired Marine two-star general that had the Navy Cross in Vietnam. His point man, he was a Force Recon Marine. I knew him when I was a boot second lieutenant, and he was a lieutenant colonel. I met him. I had such awe of him. Why? One, because he was a Navy Cross winner. He was a hero. But he also held the Guinness World Book of Records for sit-ups. He's the world sit-up champion. 25,000 sit-ups. I'm not kidding. Look him up, Wayne Rollins. He lived in my nursing home. He had dementia. And when I would go and sit and talk to him, if I mentioned recon, he sat up straighter, he got excited, and he started talking about recon. There's certain things that never leave a Marine's mind. But he was on a point patrol, and his point man's gun jammed, so he ran to the front. He threw himself between the point man and the enemy. He charged in. He was shot up. He was blown up, and he kept going, and he won the Navy Cross to take care of his Marines. Those are the people we take care of. I have 250 empty beds right now waiting for veterans in the state of Florida to move into. I must fill those beds because they earned it. They deserve it. And I want to help their families. And I need your help getting to staffing, because with staffing, I can do it. I can fill the beds. And I can take compassionate, quality, safe care of those veterans who gave their lives literally and sometimes figuratively for us. So, Mr. Chairman, that's why I'm brief. And I appreciate y'all. Let me stand up here with passion, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, sir. And members, I know that we have a lot of questions. Just wanted to say this before we go into questions. General, Mr. Astolos, to the entire team, I think I convey sort of the sentiment and the feeling on this committee. We appreciate your work and your passion on behalf of our veterans. Thank you for your presentation. We're going to go first with Representative Salzman. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. I typically don't support conversations on pay increases. I'm on seven committees, and almost every committee, people come to me, us in the committee, and say, we have to keep up with the industry. But you mentioned a couple of things that have resonated. Your past requests over the past 5 years, you haven't asked for more money. You haven't come to us with the sky is falling. This year you are. And you mentioned that you're 30% lower, I believe is what you said, than the private sector in your pay. Is that 30% lower than the average pay now, or is that pre-COVID?
Sure.
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Yes, it's currently 30%. We were always lower. Pre-COVID, we were lower. We paid less. But we weren't that much less because there was a lot of people working and there was a lot of people in the industry. But when COVID came on, as you were all aware, more people are trying to get that same nurse, that same LPN, RN, CNA, working in the same nursing homes, and there's just fewer of them. But there's more need now across the state. So the industry surpassed us. The warfare changed. The battlefield changed. They paid more because private industry can do that. Bonuses, incentive plans, shift differentials, base pay. That kept going up, and we were holding the line where we were. And that's why we are not competitive right now. I'm blessed that I have the staff that I have. I'll be perfectly honest. I'm really blessed that the people have hung with us because they want to serve veterans. I'm responsible to them. I need to help them, and I want to fill those empty beds.
Follow-up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my last question is about the nursing homes in general. You said that was the, you have eight, that'll be the eighth one in the state, I believe is what he said. In comparison to other states, I'm curious to know how Florida ranks for beds for veterans. And by the way, I need one of these in Pensacola. Shameless plug. We have no nursing home facilities for veterans in the panhandle. Why not? That's not a question, sorry. But where do we stand with the rest of the states in the nation?
You're recognized.
It's a great question, Rep. Solomon. I really appreciate it. And again, I appreciate your being a veteran. I really do. We outperform the other states. We have more veterans nursing homes. When we open these two new homes, we'll have more than California, more than Texas, more than any other state. Why? Because we have 1.5 million veterans. We have more veterans in Florida. We are the most veterans sought after state. We have more veterans moving to Florida. So the homes and the beds availability are closing and shifting down in California, and they're because their veterans aren't there. They're leaving. Age passes on. But then, so we have an increased market need. It's going to continue to grow. So that's why we have more than other states. We have other counties that are desperately really and needing. We have an assessment. We know where we have gaps across our state. We have a great nursing home in Panama City. That's as far west as I go right now. And I do want to support you.
Ranking Member Brown, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Director Hartzell, for being here. And thank you for all that you are doing with helping through this, our veterans through this crisis in your home. But wanted to kind of touch bases on a couple of things. What are some of the specific factors that are contributing to the decrease in your bed numbers, if you can share that with us?
You're recognized.
The decrease in bed occupancy?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Some of the specific factors are, well, the bottom line is staffing. As my staffing numbers went down, okay, as people decided to retire because they didn't want to go into a third year of fighting the COVID fight, and they're clinical professionals, because I have a very well-served, mature workforce, working for us in our homes, which we're very blessed to have, but many of them retired. So I lost staff there. Then I lost a lot of staff due to private sector hiring my people to work in the same city. Their kids go to the same school. They can go to the same church, and they're getting paid $5 to $15 more an hour doing the same exact job. And I can't not compete with that. So I lost staff to that. I did. I lost staff to that. COVID as a pandemic didn't hurt my people physically, my staffing. It hurted us financially. That's where the biggest need was. And then for my residents, our residents, obviously natural attrition, because we have a very aged population of our veterans. And again, they're in a skilled nursing facility for a reason. They're very sick, many of them. And they would pass on from this life to the next life. And I wasn't normally in pre-COVID, I had a wait list of people that would fill that empty bed. I have the wait list now, but I can't fill the empty bed with people waiting because I don't have the staff to support them. It's about quality of care. It's dangerous. You know, I will not accept that danger, that risk. Like I said, I can move people into beds right now, but that's accepting too much risk as a commander for my ORM, my risk management. I just can't do that.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so have you been able to maintain those minimum staffing levels for your patients? And even are you required to have those minimum staffing levels? Are you all are up under the same requirements as private nursing homes?
You're recognized.
It's an excellent question. And yes, we are. We are certified and audited and reviewed by the same standards as all nursing homes, same exact standards. And we do have minimal staffing standards that we have to maintain quality of care. And some of those are by position. I have to have a certain number of RNs, certain number of LPNs, certain number of CNAs, certain number of occupational physical therapists and services we have to add as well. So it's what I call my direct care clinical staff is more than just nurses. It's also those people that have hands-on with my veterans. Again, they're hiring and being pulled to other jobs. And so, yes, we do have standards, and we're meeting those standards. And, again, that was where, you know, the team, we could have gone beyond. We could be at 75% right now, tomorrow, if I said admit them. But that would be pushing the envelope of the standards to where it would be risky. And if I had fresh, new troops that were fighting this fight, I could probably accept that risk, some of that. But again, they're burnt out, they're tired, they're worn out because of what the fight they've been in and having to wear PPE and help and the loss and the grief they've had. And then their kids have been out of school early on. Those, all those things are part of the problem that I have with staffing.
One more question.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Yes, if you could, thank you, Mr. Chair, if you could just share with us, what's that average, what's that hourly rate? I know you've mentioned it a couple times in your presentation, and then also with Rep. Salzman, but what's that hourly rate that you are paying your RNs, your LPNs, your CNAs?
You're recognized.
Thank you, and I will get you that number. I will, and I'll get that for the whole committee. I don't know if I want to publicly announce that right now, because then I might lose more people. I mean, the people are poaching. I have people just waiting to hire the great staff that I have right now. But I can definitely get you those numbers. But it is, as an average, is 30%. But as I said, some of those senior nurses, those nurse supervisors, some of the people that are very skilled in their skill sets, it's 51% gap between what I pay them and what the private sector is paying them. And I just can't. The only reason they stay with me is because they love veterans. All right, and those are great people, and I can't lose them.
Okay, we have Representative Harding. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as always, General, I appreciate you and your service and your mission-minded approach, and appreciate having you on our team. What percentage, we talked a little bit about supplemental staffing, and do you have a figure of what the state is spending on supplemental staffing now in the homes that we have? Do you have an idea of what that is?
You're recognized.
And I may call Bob Asalas up to answer some of these questions, because I hired Bob as Deputy Executive Director because of his great background that he has in nursing homes, and he may be able to help me on that question. Okay. So Bob, you have that? You may need to ask again, Rep. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. So for our staffing, we are trying to keep our staffing agency as low as possible. We are about in the 10 to 15% range of our staff being filled in by staffing agencies. I don't have the dollar amounts, but generally when you bring in a staffing agency person, right now we're looking at probably around double the salary for what one of our employees costs. So we're 10 to 15% staffing agency, and you figure each one's about double the salary. I could get you the exact numbers of what that would be.
And I can't, so let's say you're a registered nurse, and I'm paying you, let's say, $20 an hour, $25 an hour. The staffing agency that I have to hire that same RN position for, I'm going to pay $40 to $50 an hour every time. And I'm lucky to find them at that. And the problem is I've got other people trying to get that same staffing agency RN nurse who's very skilled, and they can pay them $60 an hour. That's the issue. So we're not competitive. Does that answer your question, sir? I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Yeah, that does, thank you. I have two more questions, and I'll make them brief. They're online with what we've been talking about. On the staffing shortage, do you feel we're doing everything within our budget now to get our numbers up and to fill our need? As you know, I mean, we hear from everyone in the industry, whether it's home health or hospitals or nursing homes, it's just continued theme is that the staffing shortage. And I guess budget-wise, do we feel confident that what we're proposing is going to help fill that? And then the second part of that is there anything that we're doing that's outside of the box that maybe these other folks are not doing to help recruit folks to come work in these homes?
You're recognized.
Great. And I'll answer the last part first. We had a staffing battle pre-COVID. So we advertise in the movie theaters. Come work for us. Here's a veteran. We pulled their hearts out. Come and work. You're doing the job anyway. Come and work with veterans. And we had people coming. People stopped going to movies because of COVID. We lost all those. So we had to think out of the box, and we have. So we're out there banging on doors. Friday, I'll be down at Indian River State College because they have a program where they're getting quality clinical people going through the college. And I don't have a direct affiliation with them because I have a nursing home close by. So we're doing everything we can along that line. With this incentive plan, and I don't like to call it a pay plan, but it is an incentivized great work, great performance, recruiting, retention, and elimination of staffing, agency staffing. Yes, I do believe that we will get there with this incentive plan added, this $8.5 million. I believe that I can get to, that's, and I'm standing here to say, we can get to 80% by the end of this, basically by August 1st of this year, with our plan to get to 90% occupancy by the end of the fiscal year, or calendar year. And I'm just as, again, as a reminder, once I get to 90% occupancy, and I know I can do that with staffing, and this is a plan I need help on for the staffing, then the trust fund reconstitutes itself, and I don't have to ask for money from the state. Other nursing homes don't have that. They don't do that. Private nursing homes don't have that because Florida Medicaid pays a lot for those residents. I only have 29% Florida Medicaid paying our residents right now and our staff. 70% of the people who are in our nursing homes are paid by the federal government, the VA. Federal dollars pay us. That's why I'm a money maker for the state of Florida when we're full. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, and Bob.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative, so last year, that staffing agency component cost us about $3.6 million of additional payment. This year, we anticipate it'll be about $7 million over the fiscal year. And just one additional thing that we are doing is, so we put out an intent to bid to the staffing agencies to provide services to all our buildings. So we use our buying power. Right now, each building uses their own staffing agencies. We actually had 28 bids come in, and we're looking at the four bids, and we're gonna hire them. We're gonna hire three of the four to do all our buildings. And we think there, we're gonna save at least 25% on our staffing agency costs. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, it's a follow-up to the follow-up to follow-up. Sorry. Thank you, sir.
You're recognized.
Thank you for your indulgence. We have a great plan in place, and we can hold at 65% forever. I am not going to accept that. Personally, I cannot accept 65%. Our northern states just the north of us, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, I work with them because, again, we have veterans across state lines routinely. Their current bed capacity right now is about 35% in their state veteran nursing homes. I feel for them because think of the gap they have. We're doing so much better than other states with the fight that we're in. But I am not accepting 65%. That's why I need help.
Follow-up, you're recognized, Representative Harding.
Last question, and thank you for the numbers. That's really helpful to understand the impact. The last question I have is, do you feel that any of the federal kind of unknown on federal mandates, how does that factor in with staff? I mean, obviously that is something that the rest of the healthcare industry is facing, and obviously the nursing homes fall under some of the stricter guidelines that the federal government has on some of the mandates that are still in question and out there. And do you think that's a contributing factor and with folks that are leaving at all?
To recognize.
It hasn't been up to this point because Florida's free. I have people who have stayed, and they haven't gone to other states. They've been other states are poaching my people, too, all right? Pay a lot more, move, sign-on bonus, moving bonus, will buy your house, all that kind of thing. But people want to be in Florida and for the right reasons, and my staff. So the staff that I have that has not affected them to this point, we'll see what happens in the future as this evolves. But right now, I've got people that want to work, and they're willing to do whatever it takes, obviously, to work for so much less money, base pay, to be there. So I'm not losing because of that reason.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, General and Mr. Stallus, for your presentation. But most of all, thank you for your service.
Thank you,
ma'am. And I would like also to thank all my colleagues who are veterans and everybody else in the audience. I know they have asked you a lot of questions on the staffing. And there's no doubt that we do need to give our vets the best because they have given us their best. And I know you mentioned that you have not been coming to ask for money, which is true. Mm-hmm. So my question to you, in light of the shortage, you are operating at the 69% overall, you know, your working staff, which means you have a shortage of 31% that you need to fill. Have you tried to establish a pipeline with the different colleges and universities and the areas where those homes are? a pipeline, not even so you could get them straight from the school as opposed to going to those agencies in order to help you to fill that gap that you are facing.
Yes. Vice Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, we have. Yes, we have. And again, pre-COVID, we had a great relationship with nursing schools, nursing colleges, and even we have high schools in Pasco County. We have a high school program that people want to get in the clinical care field. Those high school students were coming and volunteering and being interns in our nursing home. And guess what? When they graduate high school, then we would make them a CNA, and they get into that pipeline, and then they could go on to get their degrees and become an LPN or RN. So we do have some very good programs across, even in your part of Florida, all of them. You know, Panama City, all of my current homes have an direct affiliation with educational institutions that's a pipeline. And we do have part-time. You know, they're taking college, they're taking school, and we help them. And it's great because it's a great mentorship-type program. I have a lot of, I said, very mature nurses, and they're bringing under their wing some of these younger people that want to get into the nursing field, and they can talk to someone who's a mentor and someone who's an advocate for them because of the years they've spent into the industry. So that's also a pull that we have and is an advantage over private industry, I believe, to get some of those people from those schools that want to come in. But if you're in school and you want to serve veterans, but your pay is this here and your pay is this here, those young people, it's just hard to, I can't convince them to stay on at such a reduced pay.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Did that answer your question?
Thank you. Actually, okay. You did. Thank you. May I?
You're recognized for a follow-up. Yes.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. As you know, I have a bill to try to get veterans, medical medics and corpsmen, to get them into the medical field. And Bob is working with me on it. And this is a bill that can really help you and your mission to get your agency staff. You mentioned that you are opening two more homes, right? I was hoping that one of those homes would be in South Broward, where we really need it, because as you know, everyone wants to move down there to South Florida. You know, we have the climate, we have the best food, we have the best people as well. yes, we do. So is there any way that you have on the plan to open one more down there in South Broward? And if not, what do we need to do in order to get it? Because I have been hearing the same concern where we need to provide more homes for our vets.
You're recognized.
Thank you. As I said, about 5 years ago, it may almost be 6 years ago now, we did a statewide assessment of where veterans live in that age population, that age group that has their most at risk health-wise, and where we need to have state veteran nursing homes if we're going to open new ones. We know where that is, and that's how we picked Port St. Lucie. That's why we were able to get Northeast Orlando. There's a couple other places that were already assessed in that assessment 5 years ago. North Central Florida, Southwest Florida has already been assessed as gaps. Your part of Florida has a gap, but it didn't fall. It's below those gaps. So, yes, there is definitely a gap in Miami-Dade, Broward, that area, because we have Pembroke Pines. And that's one of my best serviced nursing homes as far as people waiting to move in. I mean, I don't have any problem for people to wait and move in. But I have other places. I'm just being very honest, ma'am. I have other places in Florida that have a greater need right now because there's nothing around them. They can't even get into, say, a Pembroke Pines because there's just so far. They'd have to drive across Alligator Alley, as an example, to get into a home. And who wants to do that with their family? They'd have to visit. So do we need one in that part of Florida? Yes. Yes, we do.
You're recognized.
Madam Chair, if I may, I know it might be a little out of order, but I have the mayor of Miramar, Mayor Messam, if you don't mind, because they have to leave to catch to go somewhere else. And I would like to acknowledge them because they are here to support our veterans as well and the bill. If I may, for a minute, would that be possible? I would like to recognize the wonderful team of the great city of Miramar who are here as well to support our veterans' cause. Mr. Mayor Wynn Messam, standing over there, the Vice Mayor Yvette Colburn, Commissioner Alexandria Davis, and Commissioner Maxwell Chambers, and also the Legislative Director, Devon Campbell, if I may, Madam Chair, please. Thank you for being here. We appreciate you. I know you have to leave. So thank you, Madam Chair. I know it's out of order, but they have to go. And I didn't want them to leave without acknowledging them. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
Welcome to the Florida House. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, thank you both for your service to our country. Kind of on the same lines as Rep. Woodson's comment in regard to medics, is there any kind of a recruitment within the military to serve the military veterans? Do you have any kind of programs that would incent folks who are leaving the military to go into some of these professions where they would be able to continue actually their service in a very different way?
You're recognized.
There are direct leaving Department of Defense medical fields, medics, corpsmen, those kind of people, affiliations with a government agency called the Veterans Affairs. U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. They have a direct affiliation federal to federal to try to get those people to come on board and work. So we have great VA hospitals across our state, veterans clinics, CBOX, you know, community-based clinics. So there's a direct affiliation for federal to federal there. And guess what? The federal government pays more for that corpsman and that medic than I can pay. So I'm happy they're coming to Florida, and they're serving our 1.5 million veterans. They're doing it under the federal flag. Now, for those who don't want to work for the federal government anymore, I hire them in a heartbeat. And we do have a direct, you know, I've talked to the service counterparts, my friends, they're leaders right now. They know, come to Florida. And there's a lot of reasons why you're a veteran, you come to Florida. But one is to serve other veterans and to be connected to the great benefits. So I do have a direct by the services connection, but I am competing with the federal government. It has a great program. I just have to be honest. They pay more than we do, currently do. But I can compete with them, too, with this pay incentive plan or this staffing incentive plan. Okay.
Thank you. Good. Vice Chair Tribolsi, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here today and proposing your plan. I appreciate what you're doing for our veterans. I have a couple of questions. Your facility in Tradition, I've toured it. It's a great facility. I was under the impression that it was open, but just at a low capacity. It's not open at all.
We
you're recognized.
Sorry, thank you. She was the chair. Thank you. Yeah, just a Marine, y'all. It is open, and we're waiting for our first. We had an opening ceremony, and I know several of the reps were able. You were there to see it, but we have not admitted our first resident yet. We have not, because we're still waiting for to get a fence around a pond, which we got. COVID slowed us down, and the pandemic actually slowed us down. So yes, we will be, as Bob briefed, we'll be having our first residents looking in May, coming in.
Follow up.
Yes, please. Yep. Are you staffed for that opening in May?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We will be. I don't have the staff on board. I have leadership staff, and I have the maintenance staff and the people to keep it open right now. And as we get to where we can, we have a staffing plan to hire that initial set of staff, CNAs, RNs, LPNs, and others, to meet that first eight, I believe it is, that we're going to be moving in. And then it will quickly progress after that, because again, the timing of that, with the approval of this incentive plan, if I can get that, then I can hire people much easier and retain people easier too.
Do you have another question?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So with your plan and the dollars that you're asking for to incentivize, as I understand it from the questioning, if you can incentivize with this amount of money and get up to a 90 to 95% occupancy rate, then you will be sustainable. Do you have a backup plan for the next Omicron or if the staffing agencies then even increase their rates from there and continue to hold us hostage?
You're recognized.
That's a very good question. The next pandemic, you know, we've always been ready for the hurricane. You know, if it blew the roof off one of my, you know, Cat 5, you know, hurricane, we'd be ready, and it's disaster recovery response. I'm in a staffing disaster recovery response mode right now, and that's what we're focused on. I don't anticipate another type staffing issue. And staffing is the key. I can fill the beds if I have the staffing. Will the private industry outperform? I really don't believe they can. They are really, really paying. Their profitability rate is pretty much maxed out right now because everybody's desperately trying to hire the same person. They will lose money bad if they actually go much higher than they are right now, I think, personally. But I don't know if Bob has a different answer. But I don't believe we'll need to compete. If we can do this, I do believe that we can compete. And I don't see how private industry would pay more. Because, again, I don't have that many people I'm asking for, numbers-wise. I mean, it's the people who want to work with our veterans anyway. If I can get them to come on board, there's a much bigger, we have 700 nursing homes across the state that are after all those other people as well. I'm trying to get the ones who want to serve our veterans.
One more question.
You're recognized.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you're going down to Port St. Lucie to visit with Dr. Moore.
Yeah.
We've just opened another nursing facility so that we can help reach this demand. It's a two-part question. Are you working also with Kaiser University, which is right there in Tradition? And are you considering any type of tuition reimbursement?
You're recognized.
That's a good question. I would have to either defer to my team and find out because each of my commanders, Stephen Rule is my commander there at our Port St. Lucie, Marty Arcopa's home. I know he does have an affiliation with the Kaiser. I don't know about the other, but I'll find out from him.
Thank you.
Members, questions?
And Bob says he may have that answer.
Bob?
If that's okay.
You're recognized.
We are looking at joint partnering with Kaiser. And one of the other things for tuition reimbursement, there is actually a great program that the state has that we will reimburse people who are going to nursing school. So we do have that program. And then, of course, the state benefit that allows us to take 2 college credits paid for. So that is one area that we're really promoting out there. And as far as staff goes, we are looking at hiring the staff for it. Licensed clinical social worker is our most difficult one. We have to have one per the VA. We're having a hard time finding one there. Maybe you can help us find someone who's willing to work in the veterans nursing home. And the other thing, too, as far as diversification goes, one of the things that General Hartzell has asked me to look at is how can we diversify our nursing home so that the next Omicron we're able to do that. And we have put some things in place. We have never had a Medicaid contract for our domiciliary. We have applied for a Medicaid application. So now we can collect Medicaid for the dom, which is going to bring in an additional $300,000. Also, we have great rehab facilities in our buildings, right? So we're looking at our buildings. Can we do outpatient rehab, which would be another form of revenue? And we'll be able to take care of veterans because veterans want to come to us for their rehab. So we're looking at particularly in Daytona, where the structure is right to do outpatient rehab. And the other thing, too, is as we build new nursing homes, we want to build them diversified, too. We want to have Medicare. We want to have rehab and diversify that payer base so that the next Omicron will be in better shape.
Members, questions. Well, I have a couple of questions for you, General. So last session, we shifted about $19 million to the Department of Veterans Affairs. This session, you're requesting $44.1 million. Let's say the following year, will there be sort of another request to shift more funds? I mean, where do you see kind of the shifting kind of stop and kind of saying, okay, this is what we need, this is an accurate amount, we're going to move forward with this? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, that is a great question because that's the same question I've asked my team because I'm a businessman at heart, even though I look like an old Marine. I went back and looked at our numbers. When we are at 90%+ occupancy, and I can't get there without the staffing. So contingent upon getting the staffing to be able to safely take care of 90% occupancy, I won't be back here asking those kind of monies. Because over the last 5 years, I'll just say, I asked for $7 million, $5 million, $6 million, $6 million, and $2 million. And then last year was higher because we were opening 2 new homes, and we were in the front end of COVID, and I was already losing occupancy there. And when I get back, so when I'm not, when I'm in the standard operating procedure environment, I will not be back asking for that kind of money. This is truly a gap filler trust fund solvency, which is what the committee's question was, because of the reduced income we had at such a low occupancy rate. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But my follow-up would be, I mean, what's sort of the department's projection in terms of, with these fund shifts, what is the projection in terms of, and I know you spoke about 90% to 95% mm-hmm. occupancy in order to really kind of be mm-hmm. solvent. What is the projection or the time frame for that to occur? I know, obviously, yep. we can't predict what will happen tomorrow, but I mean, in terms of a projection standpoint, where do you see, I guess, 5 years out, do you see us in terms of the department being fully solvent, you know, without a problem? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not even 5 years out. 2 years from now, again, if I get back to where I'm at occupancy, the trust fund builds itself. I mean, it really does. And then about every 2 years, when that builds that big reserve, then we take a part of that money to build the next nursing home. That's how the system worked over all these years. And that's why you see about every 5 years, you would see a little bit of a spike, ask for a little bit more money in addition to our trust fund to build that next home. Because then when we occupy that home and we have the staff for that home, it starts adding the trust fund. So I don't need to build any more homes right now, just so everybody's awareness. I need to get right and resolve what I have in our currents. So to specifically answer your question, yes, sir, in 5 years, absolutely, without question. Because, you know, we'll be looking then at that next nursing home, and we'll have the two current nursing homes open. And so we'll have a total of 8, and we'll be at, you know, like my plan right now is to get our plan with this staffing incentive plan to help us get there is by July 1st, we can get to 80% occupancy. Right, that's the goal, to get there. But I can't do that without staffing. By the end of the calendar year, I want to get to 90%. And it could be better. Like I said, I really believe there's a group of people waiting, and they're all waiting to see, because they know everybody's going to compete for them and their work. I have people that left. They've told me, I will come back to work where I love working in your nursing home if you could pay me a little bit more. The people are there. And that will get us to the occupancy.
Perfect. And my final question is, and kind of to piggyback off of our vice chair's questions with regards to the two new nursing homes. Mm-hmm. I think both of them were projected, I guess, in May to I guess, be operational.
Yes.
I mean, I know leading up to this, there have been several delays. Do you foresee another delay, or is kind of like the hit time, you know, sort of that May time frame?
Yes, sir. Great question. Yes, sir. We there are no more delays. Yeah, we've addressed all those. As I said, we know specifically which fence has to go around which pond, you know, those kind of things. We know exactly where we are. The only delays we would have would be with other state agencies' approvals, but I've already got commitment from my peer Simone Marshallers and others. Hammer, let me know what you need. We will make it happen. So, yeah, there are no other delays that are anticipated that won't let us will prevent us from having first residents come in May, without question. It's a realistic plan. Yes, sir.
Actually, just one last question. I mean, how long do you kind of foresee the utilization of staffing agencies to kind of, you know, backfill sort of the need that you have in terms of staffing?
Great question, Mr. Chairman. You know, again, pre-COVID, we had staffing agencies. You know, we always did, but it was just a small percentage. So we'll always need to have some staffing agency augmentation. We always will. And that's fine to have that. As Bob talked about, as Deputy Secretary Stahl has talked about, we have this IPB in place where we are going to control the agency. We are going to manage the agency and have our expectations and the cost reduction and the quality where we're in control of it. Before, it was just each of the homes had their own agency they worked with. It was relationship agencies. When you're at 98%, you can do that, and that was fine. But it's a different battlefield that we're in right now. Everybody's working for those same agencies. So we have to compete in that, and we're going to do as a state entity, and they want to compete. They put in bids. So we'll have a very small percentage of agency. So I want to eliminate the need for agency, not the utilization, but the need, the drastic need for agency, because right now I have to have them to even have the doors open.
Perfect. Thank you, General. And I believe our vice chair has a question. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me in this. And this is off the topic of the budget. Do you know if you have any women veteran residents in any of your facilities?
You're recognized.
The answer is yes. Yeah, one of my favorite women veteran residents was in Panama City. She was 101 years old. I would go and see her whenever I went there, and she would walk me around, and she was a team leader for her group, for her area. Everybody loved her, regardless of gender. She was phenomenal. So, yes, we do have women. It's a very good question, though, and I forgot to mention it, and Bob would remind me later, that our state veteran nursing homes, our population is 90% men. The privates are more. And the private sector nursing home is 80% women. Okay, so we are serving a different population. So we don't exclude women. There just was fewer women that come into our state veteran nursing homes. They're going into other nursing homes. But that also increases some of the need for when you're moving and physically moving and some of the things, the dementia that a 90-year-old male patient have versus a 80-year-old female patient. There's some differences there as far as care that we have to provide. But yes, we do have women veterans, and we love every one of them. Yep.
Members, questions? Well, thank you very much, General, and Mr. Estalos and the team. Again, just want to reiterate, and I'm sure I share the committee's sentiment and feeling of, just thank you for the amazing work, that you're doing on behalf of our state to our veterans. As you mentioned before, more and more veterans are coming to the state of Florida, and we are immensely proud to be, certainly the most veteran-friendly state in the union, and we hope to continue that. Certainly, and you're on the front lines of that mission, so we certainly appreciate your hard work and your effort in making sure that we stay that way. So thank you again for your presentation and certainly for answering these questions. And certainly anything that you need, please feel free to reach out to Brian and to the healthcare appropriation staff, as well as myself, and certainly to any of the members on this committee. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I have, before I leave, I say Brian's been phenomenal. You have a great staff. Thank you for your support in helping us prepare for today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, members. One thing I did want to mention, we've heard particularly in our last couple of meetings, certainly a lot about staffing and how that is becoming more and more of an issue, certainly for whether it's nursing homes, hospitals, certainly within the healthcare industry. That is a topic certainly of the utmost importance to this committee, I would say, certainly to the state and to our residents and certainly to our healthcare providers. So in the coming weeks, we will have more of a deep dive into staffing. Certainly really look into what is sort of the cause and effect of this, situation, and certainly what we can do to remedy that situation. So certainly I would ask that, just kind of be to raise awareness on certainly on that front. Any questions that you have, just make sure to jot those down and be ready, because in the coming weeks we'll certainly be taking up that topic and really, taking a deep dive into that. So. With that being said, is there additional business before the subcommittee? Seeing none, our Vice Chair Tobolsky, moves that we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.